Can you talk to us to say good morning?
Oh, yes, good morning.
There we go.
How is everything going?
Okay, so that we help Mom out. It's, what is the date? May 21st?
May 21st.
2011. I'm here with Jim Anderson. Today we're going to be talking, and we're going to get started on album number one.
Album number one.
The first photo album. It had, I was thinking when I got to scanning the photo albums, I was like, oh, finally the pictures, this is going to go quick. And then I realized there's 300 pictures in that first album.
Oh.
Let's see, at some point, when I was doing some research on you, I realized that you worked for Lou, is it Lou? Lou at some point. And I'd like you to, at some point, whenever, not necessarily today, but at some point I want to ask you about working for Lou, because he was the first Charles Taylor Award winner. And yeah, also...
That was a phony deal.
Phony deal?
Yeah.
Okay. And any recollections you had about working at Fairbanks there?
Oh, yeah.
Because Jess Bochner was another Charles Taylor Award winner.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have any thoughts on that Charles Taylor Award, I didn't realize... I thought it was something that was handed out fairly regularly. I didn't realize it required a minimum of 50 years in the field.
Yeah, 50 years working at it, yeah. Oh, yes, and they've handed some out to guys that were in the business, and then they dropped out, and then maybe they got back into it later after retired from some other job, and they got one, too. It's a typical FAA thing, and I don't even know if they're still doing it here in Alaska.
The last one I saw online was 2006.
Yeah, I haven't heard much more. Of course, they didn't have any guys around with 50 years experience either. Mm-hmm. There were a couple, and then they didn't like them or something. I don't know. It was kind of a strange setup. So you get a free dinner, and everybody cheers and hollers. But only you, the only recipient, gets the free dinner, yeah. The FAA doesn't splurge much money on things like this. And I had a couple certificates, but one of them was signed by Alaska Governor Murkowski, and the other one, of course, was from the FAA. But they burned up in the fire, too. I think I've got a little lapel pin somewhere to say that I had a Charles Taylor Award.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The FAA does have a description, probably the same write-up they had at the dinner for people to see online. And I've actually got a copy of it. I thought about grabbing that, but then I forgot about the fire, and then it probably burned up. But I'll bring that down. It just
Okay.
It describes your career, and it's the write-up they gave when you received the award.
Ah.
So.
Yeah. You should have seen them. They wanted me to accept it the year before. I says, no, I didn't get my 50 in. It didn't matter anything to me either one way or the other. It just means you've lasted 50 years. You're too stupid to get into a better business. So, finally comes up, I got 50 years, and when they want you, we want you to do this, we want you to do that, I says, I don't even want that award. Just leave me alone. You know, play it hard to get. Finally, was one fellow, pretty decent guy from there, John Gamble. He come wander over, and he's waving a white handkerchief, and he says, will you please? It's all for you, John. I'll do it.
You know, there's not a lot of people in any field who get 50 years.
Oh, well, let's see, what is it now? It's 50 years would have been in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Jesus Christ, got another 7 years. And I'm afraid I've about hit burnout between the hangar burning and doctors. And I was going to tell you about the thing. When they were working on my cleaning out my urethra, they found a little speck of cancer in the bladder. So they nipped it all out, and this last trip down was to make sure it was gone completely. Well, it is. So that was an improvement. Still getting up too often at night, though. Like I say, last night wasn't bad. It was only 6 times.
Oh, man.
And I wonder why I'm tired.
I called down here yesterday to Judy. I figured... you're not sleeping well at night. I figured you'd be sleeping in, especially on the weekend. So I called Judy up. I tried your cell phone. You were probably busy at the hangar. I figured I didn't want to call too early when I got off work and wake you up. And I was like, I don't want to call too early, Judy. What time does Jim get out of bed? Oh, 6:30.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Rest is hard to come by for you. Especially those getting up that early in the morning. Let's see, where do I have these pictures at? Oh, Jim Anderson, I think. That's not it. Where do I have those pictures at? There we go. So what I'd like to do at some point, I like what we're getting. I get the background data when we're going through the pictures. But what I'd like to do when we get through with the next... We have about 400 pictures to go to talk about.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And maybe it'd work out if we... I've got a friend in town who helps me build every other weekend. He works for the state up at Attigan Pass. Maybe we could kind of roughly schedule every other weekend.
If we could try that,
see how,
yeah.
See how that's working for you. I'll check in with
sure,
you.
Sure, that's no problem. Okay. But, Ooh.
Is that the Chena River?
That's the Chena River, just right near what we used to call Fouts of Landing, a little runway along the bank, about 800 foot, all told.
That's not far from your house here, is it?
No, that's just a couple blocks away. And the pilot of this was a well-qualified young fellow that flew for, flight engineer for United Airlines, I believe. And he jumped into a Cub with his uncle and took off and went tooling around and crashed, and his comment was, geez, I turned to come in and the wing wouldn't come up. Well, he stalled out. It's going too slow. It happens a lot with heavy airplane drivers getting into a small plane. They just don't have enough respect. They got out of this all right, and I think within a month the airplane was flying again.
Boy, the airplane, when you see the rest of the picture,
oh, yeah,
it looks like
yeah.
It's just... Did you repair the airplane?
No.
Just recovered
it's,
it?
See, I think this is 9-1, I think is the number, maybe... We'll have to see here. We can't make out anything there.
I mean, that...
Oh, the water is solid. Oh, boy. Heck, the pilot here, Tommy, I'd give him credit. He dove back under and got his uncle out.
The uncle was still strapped
he
in.
He was kind of hooked in there, kind of jarred around a bit, you know. Yeah.
The river looks a little high.
Yeah, it probably was. See, oh, I can't even remember when it happened. I think it was late spring, but I'm not sure. Yes.
It just amazes me when you see a plane that destroyed that it's rebuildable. At some point you'd think that it would be cost effective just to get a new one, but of course new planes are so expensive.
Oh, that, gosh sakes, for a new one now, you know, it's about $250,000 for fancy buggers. Used ones are selling for anywhere from 70 and 80 on up. And back in my youth at Fairbanks Aircraft Service, they were very expensive, about $7,000. And that was with pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, were you and I looking at pictures? Okay, I guess I'm confusing that with Hutch. I was looking at some pictures of, I think it was Bill Lavery. Who worked on his first plane? Maybe it was Hutch who was working on that.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Would have been back way back.
Hutch worked on the first one plane that Bill had, and Bill told some funny stories about that. But, and Bill was quite a character. He was still flying for Weens when I was working there.
You know, I'm not sure. I wanted to capture on tape. You had a Sam White story. How you used to.
Oh, that was the best one, yeah. Well, I got out of the service, and I was working for this Lou Applegate. Anyhow, Sam White wanted somebody to license his L5. It's up at Hughes. Oh, well, everybody got together and talked us over, so I went to Hughes to check out his airplane. Then I got over there and worked away at it a little bit, and a little more, and tinkered around. I went back and I told Sam, I says, "Oh, you're in pretty good shape. Why don't you try it out?" And he did. He said, "Oh, this is good." He says, "I got the same little noise there. I know it's good." Sam was quite a storyteller. Anyhow, they're sitting up in his room and filling out the log books. And finally, I says, "I don't think you remember me, Sam." "Well, should I?" I said, "Yeah. I'm Andy Anderson's youngest son. He lived right down the street from me. In fact, I delivered your paper for years." "Oh, you what?" Carried on. Downstairs he goes to tell everybody in the roadhouse that his paper boy was working on his airplane. Just had a laugh and a half over that one. He was quite a fella, Sam was.
You said that you were Andy Anderson's youngest boy. How many?
I got an older brother.
You got one older brother?
Yeah, he's 3 years older than me. He lives in California.
Any sisters?
No. In fact, here, a couple years ago when Judy and I were taking a little trip, we looked up my brother. He lives in Chowchilla, California. And we were there for, we got together part of one day in the evening, and then we left the next morning. But figured out it's the first time in 38 years we'd seen each other.
Your brother never has been back up here since he moved out?
No, we came up for our dad's funeral, that was about it. Completely different. No common interest at all. Mm-hmm. Really strange.
Did your dad do some time freighting on the Valdez Trail?
I don't know. No, not on the Valdez. That was, let's see, that was quite a ways back. And, of course, the trucks were all running then when I was a kid in the 50s. See, in the 40s, everybody was working for the government because of the war. They got out of that and did start doing their own thing. But, no, he never did that. He drove a cat hauling antimony out of Stampede Mine. And I don't know what the years would have been on that because we were in Seward in 1942. So it was probably prior to that.
That must have been, there's a... on that Project Jukebox Online, Jess Bachner went to somewhere in the park to recover a plane with Hutch, I think. It's the time Hutch melted his teeth, and your dad was skinning cat in there.
He was driving a cat. He came by there with the antimony and this and that, and there must have not been much timber around where Jess and Hutch were. Because I remember Jess saying, "Boy, your old man had the biggest, greenest logs I ever seen on that." Kick one off and go about his business.
Hey, your dad ended up dragging the road commission was in there. Somebody was in there building road in towards Kantishna. And there was big tent frames. And your dad ended up dragging one over and they parked. They used that and they built onto it with logs. And they parked the plane in it. Oh. It was like in the wintertime or springtime and they covered it.
I didn't know anything about that. Yeah.
No. Sometime we'll have to sit down where we have internet access, and I'll have to show you that Project Jukebox. You might like some of that.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to, yeah.
Mention your dad in.
Yeah.
Boy, that plane is just destroyed.
Oh, quite a bit of stuff left yet. See, it's just a matter of tubing.
Mm-hmm.
And the small stuff. All the pulleys and brackets and cables and seats and attached stuff. And it just goes on and on. It's where the money comes in. Mm-hmm. The fuselage, I could see. And these guys had a jig. They could just put it right in and weld together. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think we did that to this airplane here about 2-3 years ago. It's still flying. It came up when the guy was talking. And he said, "Hey, it looks like it's got a Duford annual here or something." And then we got to checking and teased them. It was pretty far out of alignment. Mm-hmm. So the owner elected, he said, "Yeah, go ahead and put her up, make it right."
So you probably have a history with some of these planes. You probably worked on some more than once in your career.
Oh, yeah, they come and went, yeah. Yeah, a fellow showed up once here. And let's see, I was at the new hangar, so it was probably in the 90s. What about talking about an annual? I'm looking through his log books, and I says, "Gee, I see I licensed this in 1973. He says, "Hey, I was shitting yellow in 1973. Oh, yeah. Some of them reappear. You haven't seen them for years. And Fred Bast, I was taking care of his for, gosh, since way back in the 70s somewhere. Oh, yeah. In fact, probably, I can't tell you how long I've been taking care of Ron Rosanders. miner out of McGrath.
Will the guys bring their planes in, since you've been based like here at Fouts Field or Chena Marina, they'll bring their planes in to you to be serviced?
Oh, yeah.
From the villages?
Yeah, from different places. Most of them are based here in Fairbanks, let me see. So. Chena Marina is nice because we've got parking and everything else for them. So you generally license all of those.
There, on the south side of your hangar, that whole field was full of planes this winter. Have those planes, were those planes that you were working on, or was that your...
No, they're just renting tie-down space. And a couple of them hadn't flown in a couple of years. Let's see, there's... We're working on one now, and two others have... One's gone into the water again on floats. Another one got moved somewhere. So it just goes on like that.
And another thing that amazes me about this is that no one was killed.
Oh, yeah. It was lucky there. Very lucky.
And the uncle was strapped in still in the...
Well, yeah, and Tom went down and got him out. Yeah, he was kind of hung up and stuff. Yeah, what in the world have we got there?
Looks like just a bare part of a plane, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know what's going on there.
Maybe the next picture will tell us something, no?
Well, there we are in my yard.
Is that Chena Marina?
No, that's down, that's right next door.
Uh-huh.
That building is the one I'm in now.
Mm-hmm.
See, I started in that one. Now I'm back in it again after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
But times have changed. That van, I used to run around all over the place in it doing maintenance work. I had a regular shop in the back end of it. And you see that gray pickup?
Mm-hmm.
I drove that thing for 30 years.
What does this creature here? This
way? That's my Metro. That could be yours. I'll fix you up with that. It was a van, you see, and then I got... bit of winter madness. Thought I'll get that thing. I got it on some trade. I said I would do something here, so I cut the back end down and made a huge pickup out of it.
Mm.
It's a one-ton rig. It's actually pretty decent. It runs pretty good.
Where was it made?
At Metro, made by International.
Okay.
Big old six-cylinder engine in it. Oh yeah.
And
you,
so
when you drive that, everybody remembers you.
Was this where your garage is now? The shop here?
It's part of that is on the old pad.
Mm-hmm.
The concrete. No, this didn't have concrete in it. The side building did, which isn't on there yet.
Do you have an idea on a year on this photo, maybe?
Oh, my. No, not really. It's probably...
After Ween, but before Chena Marina.
Oh, yeah, but that's because I was here for 20 years building... doing everything. I think that was about right. It had to be somewhere down in the late 60s, early 70s.
Where was the strip? Was it... what direction did it run?
It paralleled the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I could probably show it to you easier. It's over here about a block away. Mm-hmm. Basically, it went from Ravenwood Street to Broadmoor Avenue. And then you have to knock off a little bit. There was a couple of houses at one at the upriver end. And then there was a house down here at the lower end and some swamp, their lawn and everything. So the people didn't use that too much. So we figured there was probably about 700-800 feet that was real usable. And there's only a small bend in it, so they're pretty decent. And for years there were planes lined up on both sides. There was a whole row of float planes in the river. And there was the runway, and then across the runway there was a bunch of them parked there.
So did this field, was it just like a neighborhood field? Did it predate, it didn't, it was after Week's field?
Oh, yeah, way after. There was some fellows that lived down there, the Foutses, and they got this wild idea that they'd like to have a runway, and they figured this out. Well, the flood of 67 came through.
Mm-hmm.
And they got some deal going to build a... I guess you'd call it a levee, a flood control thing. So they got the gravel right out of the river at two bits a yard. and built the runway. Mm-hmm. And it was nice and high and dry and very good deal. Mm-hmm. It was there for quite a long time. But as the old fellas died off, things changed, and, you know, I could see it coming. That's when I moved over to, I was there in the early 70s till 93 when I moved over to Chena Marina. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a simple little thing. The Canadian airplane, you can see there. Mm-hmm. He was up visiting, and then the wind was blowing, and the other one, the rope broke, and it just kind of floated on down and into it. Mm-hmm. Didn't really hurt anything much.
That's the international float.
That's
pod?
An international float pod, yeah. He used to call me, asked me to bring the boom truck over and take care of this. Well, I got over there and looked at it. I said, boy, I don't think this will work. Better get a hydraulic crane that swivels and everything.
Doug Millard has stories about being tied up in the float pond and the wind coming up. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people, you know, they go over there and they get a two-bit rope and it's half rotten and tie up their $50,000 airplane and think everything is good. Mm-hmm. These are just some stray pictures I took while I was working over on the ramp. I don't even know what kind of plane it is. It's a home built of some sort. Nice looking thing, though.
Looks almost like a crop duster.
Yeah, I think it was strictly aerobatic stuff like that. Oh, well, there we are again, yeah. You might say they were breeding, eh?
Yeah, when I saw these pictures, I thought of that story Doug was telling me.
Mm. Let's see. Oh, that's my daughter, Elizabeth, and that's probably when she was outside going to school, going to college.
With a caribou horn.
Yep. I don't know where that came from.
But Alaska she's, girl.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the youngest girl.
Is that Lily?
No, that's Elizabeth again.
Really?
Yeah.
From the side, that sure looks like Lily.
Yeah.
Is that when out when she was in college?
I don't know what we got going here. I really couldn't tell you.
I thought that was a young Lily. I was even telling Lillian about that. I said, I think I got a picture of you. I'm not sure where it is.
Elizabeth's hair was always way darker than Lily's. Mm.
And Lillian survived her first graduation as the graduation manager.
Yeah, sounds like it. I called her last night at the fire out there to see what if she was involved. Mm-hmm. But no, everything was fine. It was Ivory Jackson. She was way back the other way. Mm-hmm. Oh, that picture was taken. That was on the river. We were camping out.
On the Tanana?
Along the Tanana, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it'd be fine to go down and get a fire going, have a picnic. I used to have a good time doing that.
Was these one of the, after 16 hours of work and the kids wanted to go out on the river probably?
I'd come staggered in and say, we'd sure like to have a picnic. Well, let's do it. We'd go. Mm. I don't know how I managed. A friend here said it once. He worked himself to death too. But I says, how did we get all that stuff done in those days? And he says, we were just tired all the time and didn't realize it.
Not sure where that is.
I think that is at Kotzebue. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm quite positive it is. He's just rolling one float out, and then he's going to snap the other one out.
Is this when you were up working for Buck Maxim?
Yeah, yeah.
How did that come about? How did you end up working for Buck?
We were both working at Ween's about 1963, 64, something like that. I was building this place, living in a trailer over there. Buck, he moved a trailer in over here. So we got to keep kind of friends, being working together and carrying on a bit. And then years later, why I was working for myself, and he'd gone to flying for himself, and he calls up one day and he says, could you come up and help me? And I thought it sounded like a good deal, I'd do that. So for the next 20 years or so, I would, when Buck called up and had a problem, I would go. Mm-hmm. And like I said, his one airplane, a single otter, I changed engines on it 8 times. Mm. Once it was in a hangar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's some might be some pictures of that otter later. It's laying upside down in
Oh, yeah, it went in the Noatak River, yeah. Mm-hmm. Buck was not flying it.
Was Buck a pilot when he worked for Wayne, or?
No, he was a mechanic. Mm-hmm. And he'd been working for Era Helicopters, and then he found out, boy, Wayne's paid a heck of a lot more, so he went to work for Wayne's. And he was over at Nome, and he got to flying over there. Picked up a plane somehow and started flying there. And he just never stopped. He went out and got his commercial. Just kept on going.
Is Buck still alive?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, he's over to Kotzebue right now. Mm-hmm. The last several years, he's been going over there hauling hunters and things around.
Oh, he's still flying?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's only about 71. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, last year there was nothing going on, and this year he says, oh, it just kind of be going to go look at things he wanted to look at, and that was it. Mm. Yeah, that's one of his airplanes there.
It's kind of neat because you can take the N numbers, throw them into Google on the internet and search and get all sorts of
history. Oh, yeah. And that's what I was doing. I was fixing a float. He had fishing. The Park Service wouldn't let him land in this river, so he landed in a little lake. And it was a little too little. When he took off, he hit the float in the bank. Mm-hmm. So I got up there, and you know, see, one wingtip was a little damaged too. Anyhow, I got up there and fixed it all up.
Is that Buck?
That's Buck there. Okay. Yeah. Good size feller.
My dad, I'm not sure if, like, in between strikes or when he was working for Wayne up there, or I know through the years Dad's flown for Buck a little bit.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah, he was Wayne pilots that worked for me. See, the float was bent up. So in this picture, I got the 1 2x4 braced against the tie-down cleat on the nose of the float, held up in the back, and if you look, you can see a jack up here. Mm-hmm. So I was jacking the thing down again to get some of the wrinkles out and patch it up.
When there was this float just crumpled, or was it actually tore on the bottom?
It wasn't torn on the bottom, no, no. It just kind of crumpled it, wrinkled it, and went up a little bit.
Did you have to, after you got it straightened out with the jack and everything, did you have to brace it to keep it shaved?
Oh, I was putting some more aluminum on it. Mm-hmm. It's something pretty badly wrinkled, so I had to get rid of that. So fresh aluminum and everything else. Actually, I think the float is over at Chena Marina now. I used it for many years after this. It was on a 185. Yeah, there you see.
See the crinkle.
Yeah. So I had to kind of get rid of those wrinkles.
And floats are outrageously expensive, aren't they?
Yes.
So it makes a lot of sense.
And it's changed now a bit. They've got some new ones out, and everybody goes to them. The resale value on aluminum floats has gone down quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. What are the new ones made of?
Kevlar or plastic of some sort, yeah.
Some sort of composite.
No, there's hardly any maintenance to them, you see. They don't corrode, which one big problem. Mm. And they hit things and they bounce off instead of ripping holes. It just goes on and on. Can't even think what the heck the name of them is. I get it mixed up with something else. Not Excalibur, but it's something like that. I don't remember now. I've never been around any myself. I just talked to people who used them.
Kotzebue?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah, it looks about right. There, you can see the big green piece I put in.
Mm-hmm. Is that aluminum?
Yeah, it's aluminum, just chromated. Mm-hmm. Keep the corrosion down.
What kind of plane was this? Was this
185. That's the 185, yeah. We're taxiing around again.
Is that the 185 that you were planning repairing the floats on?
This? Oh, this is Super Cub here.
Super Cub, okay.
Yeah, I don't know whose that is. And there was the wingtip I had to repair.
Same incident?
The same 185, same incident, yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, it was good. Wind and it's cold. I was up there with a bucking bar and a rivet gun, and both of them were just soft. Oh, my hands got cold. We're standing up on a painter's stand to work on it. And the wind just howling around me.
What is a bucking bar?
Oh, well, you have a rivet gun, and you pound on the head of the rivet, and the bucking bar go against the blunt end, and it flaps it out. That's the Russian airplane, the AN-2. Kind of an impressive old thing. The FAA never would approve them in America for some reason. They were built in different countries all around the world and flown everywhere the Russians were, and even where they weren't. But the FAA said they couldn't do that because they didn't have some paperwork on them.
Four-bladed prop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you talk to people who flew those?
No, no.
I was wondering what the reputation of the plane was.
Well, it must be pretty good. So many countries used it, and they used them for everything from crop dusting to search and rescue, and just plain like we use Cessnas, you know, over in Siberia, hauling people all over.
There's a whole bunch of Russian planes.
Yeah, there was three or four of them showed up. I went over and took some pictures of them.
Was there an air show or something?
No, I don't know what it was. It was right after the end of the Cold War, and everybody was trying to be buddy-buddy and everything like that.
Ingostran.
They were kind of cute-looking little rigs. Big daddy of the airplanes. I suppose you'd say that's comparable to our single otter. It might even be a little larger. I know it's got a bigger engine. It'd be my usual shambling self in front of it.
With a German cap on.
Yes, my barge captain's hat. I still had a new one of them in a box, and it burned up too.
I'm learning to date the pictures by when you're wearing the cap, some of them. This is Fouts again, or is that Chia Marina?
No, this is right next door.
Do you still have the van?
Oh, no, no. That was one of the few rigs I sold for a profit after driving it for many years.
Was it heated?
No.
I was thinking it would be nice for winter repair.
No, I didn't. Not in wintertime, it's just too much problem. You got heaters, you got this, you got that. Sure, you go out. It's a real emergency because you got to get a Herman Nelson and take all that stuff with you to keep thaw things out to work on them. So basically, in the winter, you want to do your shop time and build up projects, stuff like that. And that's our famous old boom truck, which has lifted airplanes all around the country for ages. I do believe I still have the Territory of Alaska title for it.
Oh, it was an old...
My dad picked it up somewhere in the late 40s.
Really? This is the inside of the... This was the small part of your shop?
This was a bigger part. This was added... See, I had the wooden part that I'm in now. And then alongside of it, we built this one, which is about... I think it was 24 wide and about 32 foot deep or something like that. 32 or 36, yeah. And so George Clayton in Virginia and his Model T.
Okay. I thought that was a postcard.
No, that's George himself. It might have been a card. Yeah, he was quite a character. He used to compose songs and sing them. We always kind of chuckled because they'd have different words, but it was always the same tune. Yeah, heck of a nice guy George was. Collected everything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's out on... Sir Chena Hot Springs Road, just sinking into the mud, whole cars and parts of airplanes, everything.
I know, what's the guy's name? Bill Ward, maybe? Bill? I don't know, he's got a house right downtown. He got a lot of Clayton's Model A's, Model T's.
George get a hold of the local Model A club, Ford club. So when he was a whether he had just died or was feeling pretty bum, and he set it up so that they would have first chance at all the Ford parts. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of them.
Did George have some property over on Trainer Gate?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where his home was. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of twin beaches sitting there for years. Mm-hmm. And that is a plane right over here in the Chena River. It got parked, and the ice froze it in. It got cold real quick, and it nailed it right up. They had two of them side by side. I spent all day in getting very wet before I got them out.
Mm-hmm. Was the ice significantly thick that you had to chip it out?
Or? Oh, I was walking around on it and everything else, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can... Yeah, the rigging's on it. You can see some lines up here at the top. Mm-hmm. Well, I had the boom truck back here, and I'm hooked onto those, putting a bit of strain on things. Then I put Herman Nelson tubes down into the floats, and tried heating the float up, but it took quite a while. Everything was frozen between ice and mud. It was all frozen pretty badly.
Yeah, I think you can see the Herman Nelson.
Yeah, the hose is over there, yeah. Yes, that was a cold and miserable day. Yeah, there's both heaters sitting there. Just getting started, I think.
Is that the boom
truck? Yeah, you can see the boom and the rigging over here, just over the top of it.
What is that boom truck? What?
It's over at Chena Marina now.
Yeah, what is it? It's not a Jeep.
No, it's a 1945 Dodge personnel carrier, they call it. It's kind of a low-slung 6x6.
Looks like you got it free there.
Yeah, it's getting it up on the bank now, yeah. Oh, you had to watch when things pop like that. Man, everything's twisting around at different angles. Mm. So really careful.
I suppose it'd be easy to put too much pull on it.
Oh, yeah, be careful, yeah. You know, you just kind of put a little strain enough to, and then start heating, and then you try to rock it, and sometimes you have to go around and work the... You got to be real careful chopping them out of the ice, because everything seems to deflect right into that float, and an axe will go right through them and nothing flat.
So. Would you take on a job like this by yourself? Do you have people helping you?
Yeah, I was all by myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't think anything about it. And other people said, well, you can't do that. And I said, well, I don't know why. This did it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Who does jobs like this now in Fairbanks?
I don't know. Anybody? There's not much of it going on anymore. Mm-hmm. I expect they go down and hire a great big crane and get with the program.
Is that where the other plane was?
I think that's where this one was. I picked it up and moved it back on the solid ice. And from there I would have lifted her up on the bank. Mm. Yeah, that's where the floats were. There's the second one.
Is that you?
Yeah, it might have been somebody who wandered by. I don't know. This was an odd one because it was sitting on the beach. And the guy says, oh, hell, it's going to be fine. Look at this. He forgot about overflow. Mm. Came up and overflowed and then froze right around it. When that one came loose, you could see every rivet and rib, everything formed into the frozen mud. Mm. It popped at last and came loose.
Same technique, heating up on the inside of the floats.
Heating the inside of the floats and working around them, yeah. Herman Nelson, what did we ever do without him? And they were a challenge to keep running, too.
You had a lot of experience with Herman Nelson heaters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
those are a little different than.
They just don't have any hoods on them, covers, mm-hmm. running them open. I think the other one got the cover on it. Didn't matter much either way.
Come on, Mr. Computer. I was thinking about it.
What's going on? Your machine not working?
Oh, it's thinking about it, or else it might have seized for a second. I might have to close it and bring it back up. Hmm. They do that once in a while. They're a little temperamental. I need to get to picture 44. That's 110.
Yeah, it's kind of a butchered up picture in it. Mm-hmm. Ooh, my fine tractor. This had to be probably a Chena Marina. Mm-hmm. Actually, I first bought that property in 1980. And I didn't do anything until about 91 or 92 when we started. Oh, I'd get a little bit done. Get some fill dirt and gravel in and this and that, and finally got the forms in, the footings in, and then the floor. Or did we pour the floor after the building was up? I forget which way it went. But.
Oh, I didn't realize you had bought the property, you'd worked on it that many years before you moved over there.
I had it for a long time, yeah. Mm-hmm. For somewhere near, I got divorced, and I stayed drunk for a couple of years, didn't get much done. And I remember one day I started getting things fixed up. See, the guys put the cabin up, and it was just kind of a boy, it was a disaster area. Somebody asked me once how I did on my new property. Did I get a hangar up? I said, no, but I got the outhouse built. And I got an electric pole there. I think I'm doing pretty good. I was getting started. Just like people building houses, you do one piece at a time. There, I think I got the tractor stuck.
There was
a lot of snow that year.
Would that have been like 92, that year we had all that snow? Hard to say, huh?
I don't know. Yeah, something like that.
How'd the tractor do through the fire?
It's fine. It's fine. It and this other one we use for snow plow, they're both good. Yeah, that faded. I had it, I think it was at about 40 below or something. Mm. And it was quite a thing. Got hired to thaw out a whole fleet of scrapers. And turned out, it took two heaters. Oh, damn near all day to get everything thawed out enough. Because the engines are big and they're cold and lots of iron and the transmissions. And that's been so far back I can't remember. We were running, a friend helped me out. We had two pickups and four heaters. So we'd set up two heaters on each rig. And when we first got out there, it was so damn cold. They had number two diesel in the tanks and these things. And it had just jellied. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got out there and ice fog. It's about 8 or 10 miles from out in that area, in Richardson.
Remember whose outfit it was?
Oh, yeah, Alaska Unlimited.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I worked for them one year.
Ah.
The Southwoods, isn't it?
Southwood in Mississippi, Dick Carr. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they were quite a team.
In fact, I knew I worked with their boy Carl Southwood up at, when he's working at the maintenance stations on the pipeline.
Oh, I didn't know him.
He might not have even been born when this was
Hard to say.
Then, but he said they did pretty good until they got into mining. And he said that that's when they kind of, things declined.
Well.
And they were actually in business at one time. I think it was those guys with Lafon.
Lafon? Yeah, when he started up, there were three of them. Mm. And then they bought Bud out. I said, Bud got too violent and carrying on with the Corps engineers and causing problems and this and that. But Bud just spoke what he believed. But well, it made a lot of ripples.
I only met Bud once. His son lived with me for a while.
Ah.
Mike.
I remember Bud talking one night. We were having a few beers. He says, yeah, I got two sons. I didn't, and their names are I Didn't Do It and I Don't Know. Yeah, that's over at Chena Marina. It's Ed Bush's airplane. I don't know the other one. It's before I really got anything going.
This is before the hangar was out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Did you, before your hangar was there, did you do work on planes over there?
No. I was working out of here. See, Fouts' Landing and over International with the truck. And I made some deal and I got the first part of the fill put in. By recovering a guy's plane. And let's see, that worked out pretty well. And from there on, I had a place. See, that was just a big wide fill from the road out to the runway. And then after that, I just started filling in everywhere else. If I get some money ahead, I'd get some more gravel or dirt and fill in some more. Finally got it squared away so I could put the hangar up.
But you were keeping planes over there and working out of here.
Oh, yeah, there were some people, they said, well, I don't know if they could tie down over there. I said, sure, go ahead. You know, it didn't matter a bit. But I'm not going to watch them.
How many, when you moved over there, how many, I mean, it's just lined with hangars now.
Oh, there wasn't anything there.
What year was Chena Marina built?
Actually, it was built the last year, I think, I was teaching school. It'd be 71, 72, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm.
And what did they do with all the gravel they dredged out of the float pond?
Well, they made the roads.
Oh, and
the runway. Yeah, they made this whole thing, all those roads and stuff, yeah. So they ended up, well, this was a home-built airplane. It was making a big, long trip. It was kind of fascinating.
Really?
Lots of space inside of it. Everything has twin engine.
I thought it was a Russian plane.
No. It was, they had some pictures of it in some of the aircraft magazine, kit plane or sport aviation something.
You don't think of kit planes being that size.
No, but it was a good size and fat little thing. Gosh, I think there's a double bed in the back end of it and all kinds of stuff. You could regular use it as an air camper.
U.S.? Made in U.S.?
Oh, yeah.
Put together?
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, you can see how bulky the fuselage was.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sensible. It only had 100 horse engines on it, two of them, 115s, something like that. And for the size, it was fairly light.
I was just reading a review. I forget the name of the book and the author, but I might grab a copy of it and see if you're interested in reading it. It's about a kid growing up in Fairbanks in the 40s and 50s, and just all I've read is the review so far, but I thought it would be interesting. It's just neighborhood kids and life in Fairbanks when growing up.
Was it a boy or a girl?
Boy. Mm. Boy. And he talked, part of it was about how the neighborhood kids would defend their, I mean, like every neighborhood kids, there'd be little fights and stuff.
Oh, I always have a little of that. You know, everybody had a chunk of territory. It wasn't anything serious.
Yeah. It wasn't like gang fights in New York City. But it just, I thought it would be interesting. I wonder
who that was. I thought I'd bought up to it. There was a gal, Crawford, her name was. She wrote a book, but you see, she was the daughter of one of the head people at the FE company, so that was the upper crust of society and everything. Mm-hmm. And they had their own setup on the other side of the river and the FE housing and all this sort of stuff. Yeah.
I'll, Make sure to make a note of that book and just see if you happen to know the author.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to.
I'm actually going to get the book because I'm interested in reading about it.
Yeah. And we're back there again.
Now, this is...
This is the shop at in Broadmoor. Mm-hmm.
See, to me, it looked kind of like the shop at Chena Marina, so I get confused easily.
Yeah.
But of course, there's no hills as reference behind.
Yeah, nothing. So. Yeah. That's about where the garage is now. They were downriver on a slough. Slew off the Tanana. Mm. I just took the picture there. I don't know if we even stopped. I think it was a old set up for smoking fish in.
Mm.
Smokehouse sort of thing.
Looks like the Tanana, muddy.
No, it's on the slew on the Tanana. Don't even know if I could find it anymore now, the way the river's changed around so much.
Mm-hmm. Might not even be there.
Might not, yeah. Yeah, we get into here and go down and through a few more places, and then you get down where you could catch pike.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real quiet, peaceful place.
Did you take much time through the years to do things like go fishing?
I tried. Mm-hmm. I would come home from working dead tired, and the wife would say, come on, we got to go have a picnic, or let's go fishing, or something, and mm-hmm. all up and do it. There was no days off, you might mm-hmm. say.
Did you?
I got to run the boat and take care of everything.
Did you generally take Sundays off?
Tried to, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if there's something, a pressing job, you just have to...
No, I didn't hardly work. Well, very, very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of made it a rule not to work over 10 hours, because you start getting tired and making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And you better get... I used to figure on working half a day Saturday, and that was supposedly just work on my own stuff that needed mm-hmm. maintenance. That part didn't work too well. But I tried to take off half a Saturday and all a Sunday. And from there on, it was, about 10 hours a day or better.
Mm. I had noted that one thing on that Charles Taylor Award is you could never have your license revoked. If your license was revoked, you couldn't get the Charles Taylor Award. What things did mechanics get their license revoked for?
Well, I had mine revoked, I guess they'd call it. Anyhow, they took it away from me several times. Said that I hadn't done this right, or I'd done something else wrong, or something else. Oh, boy, go round and round and round. Anyhow, it was one period of time, a strictly personality clash between me and this old FAA guy. We did not get along. And I would send in paperwork, and he would send it right back, time and time again. In fact, he made a comment once when I was still teaching A&P school that he was going to have my license. I turned around, about four students right behind me. I said, you guys hear that? Did you hear that? I might need you when it comes time.
Mm-hmm.
No, things like that did not endear me to the FAA man at all.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, then.
These people realize that yanking someone's license can... ruin their whole livelihood, their ability to feed their family, and they just didn't give a shit.
You didn't go by the book, so we take your license.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bum deal because you go in there and you got your story and they got their story. And they do not back up. They've made a comment, a statement. They're going to stick to it. Seems to work with government bureaucrats, all of them that way. They are never wrong. Well, you can go to a hearing, you're there by yourself, and there's about four FAA guys all asking questions at the same time. It's like being interviewed by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get really serious, you end up before an FAA judge and an FAA jury. That's nothing to do with the Constitution at all.
Mm-hmm.
No, no. And of course, they stick together like glue.
Sounds like being in tax court.
Basically the same thing, same mentality, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This office here was always noted for being awful hard to get any assistance, like you wanted to modify something and get an approval for it. Oh, boy, it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
People would go down to Anchorage and get them done there.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys didn't think anything about it. Oh, well, go ahead and let them go to Anchorage. It was easier to say no than to say yes and maybe have a little work to do.
Mm-hmm. That's a common theme in the interviews, like with Doug Millard,
mm-hmm.
talking about common sense things to do to make a plane safer.
Oh, yeah.
And if You know, though there's always the threat, if you do that, we're going to pull your license.
Or absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's the same part of the country.
Is this downriver on the Tenino?
Downriver, yeah. It's over on the left bank, about 10, 15 miles down. Oh, that was an old barge laid along the bank of the Chena for years. It finally disappeared. It was right over here where these new houses are.
Mm-hmm.
It laid there for years. There's the boom truck lifting a wrecked mall out of the Chena River.
What was the...
He was taking off and went to turn, and he just didn't turn.
Mm-hmm.
And he rammed it right into a very high bank at what we used to call Weaver's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And totaled it completely.
Was this down here by the University Avenue?
No. This is further down. It was, let's see. It's on the same street that Reed's Marine is on.
Mm, okay.
That's right, down there at the bank. That used to be Weaver's Landing. They'd bring in boats and trucks and everything. Oh, yeah. We were picking this up, and I said, geez, we ought to work this right, and Discovery will come by, and we'll get our picture. On the other hand, let's get this over with, and we'll have a beer. So we did.
Let's do about, let's see, we're on, are you doing okay?
Sure, no problem.
Again, a pretty crunched up plane.
Oh, boy. Yeah, he never rebuilt that one.
No?
No. It's strange, but the only planes worth rebuilding are Super Cubs and Super Cruisers. The PA-18 and PA-12. Even the Citabrias don't have a resale value as those two do. And it all costs the same to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Is it like a mall, is it less expensive to buy?
This time it would have been, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you had to buy so many parts, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they said, you can buy your whole brand new car at the parts store. But it costs you about five times as would it buy a brand in one piece. That's a problem.
Have you had any issues with parts availability on the older planes? Is that
not really? No. Not really. The older planes, simpler, and you could pretty much build everything you needed. Really, we've gone out and got nice spruce from Superior Hardwoods. Made the spars, all kinds of stuff, yeah.
What does someone Henry? Do with a plane like this when they're all done?
Well, he parked it over there by his house. He was right near his home.
Mm-hmm.
Can't quite think of his name. It was Henry something. Dale. Henry Dale. Yeah. Anyhow, we carried it over and put it in his yard, and it stayed there for a long time, and I think somebody came along and stole some parts off of it. Probably still there for all I know.
You mentioned that.
He worked up at the university. He was quite the computer shark.
Huh. You mentioned on the Tanata Lake plane that you crashed in at the end of the runway on the way up to Tanata Lake. You said that you went back there years later and it had been stripped down.
There was a few pieces left, but that was about all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that how that works with airflip craft recovery? I mean, not recovery, but once a plane is crashed and if it's left alone for a couple of years, it's open season for people?
Well, it happens. It's not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You can park your airplane on the side of a mountain, all bet, and it's supposedly still yours.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody gets in there and you find out, you can actually get them for stealing airplane parts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty hard to prove and pretty hard to do.
When you went and recovered the engines off the, was it a B-25?
Yeah.
Did you have to get approval for that? Or?
Oh, no. The owner, I told him I'm going to get the engines and stuff out of there.
Mm-hmm.
He said, get everything you can, so I did.
Mm-hmm. But that was for your harvesting the parts for your planes, not for his?
It was just dependent on what happened next. The engines were still his.
Mm, okay.
In fact, we got the engines off and took them to Anchorage and put them on another B-25 down there.
Mm-hmm.
And same engines were flying. Couple of years later.
Mm-hmm.
That's Fred Bass, PA-14. Somewhere up out of Livengood on the lake, cylinder went bad, dropped a valve. So So Fred come and got me, went up and put one on. Oh, a nice day, nice trip. Beautiful little lake.
Just a one-day job?
Oh, yeah. That wasn't even a whole day.
Isn't it awkward working on a plane from the bank or on top of a float?
Oh, yeah. On the engine? Yeah.
I mean, it adds another dimension of complexity to the whole thing.
That just adds more to it, and don't drop your tools. You see, now over at Tina Marina, now we had a couple of the platforms made up to put on the floats and work off of them. But I didn't have that here. That's Fred, the guy that owns the airplane.
Mm-hmm. When you lose a cylinder on a plane, I suppose it could be catastrophic.
Oh, you just lose all the power. You gotta give up somewhere, yeah. Depends on the type of failure, too. If it just quits firing, well, then you could maybe keep going. But in a lot of cases, it'll drop a valve, and that'll start messing up. You get all kinds of crap through your engine. Mm-hmm. Plus, it completely fouls the whole induction system. It contaminates it, so you don't have a good air flow or anything. Makes a heck of a mess.
Did he fly you in a different plane?
Oh, yeah, he took me over to somebody else's plane, yeah. And there I am in all my glory. Oh, yeah, we got a tarp down below there to catch anything that dropped. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good system, too.
Pretty country.
It was a nice one, yeah. There might have been a moose over there somewhere. I don't know.
Not a real big lake.
Oh, no, it's pretty fair. It's a pretty good airplane. It's got a 180 horse engine in it.
On the way out?
Let's see. Probably. Yeah, that's the other airplane. Mm-hmm. Somebody's cub. This is down at my old location. That is a... I don't believe that's a champ of some sort, yeah. Stripped down and getting it ready for something.
You rebuilt a lot of people's planes for them. Did you ever, like, take a plane and build it? You had, in the hangar when it burned down, there was one plane you were building. Did you ever build planes up as an investment to sell?
Oh, yeah, a couple, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one picture of Judy by a black and white clipper it was. I built that up to sell. And let's see, what else was there?
Was that the one I did the print of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did that pay for you? Was it better?
Oh, you sit there and look at it and think about it. See, I was working at the school at the time, so... I had the students do quite a bit of the work on it, you know. It was good for them, it was good for me, and everything worked out fine. I had a nice project to work on.
When you were working at the school, were there engines that students rebuilt, just like in the diesel program, that you guys, static engines?
We didn't really rebuild any usable engines. Mm-hmm. But we had engines there to take apart, put together, check, and see how they worked.
So the more things you could bring in...
Yeah, you know, it was kind of interesting. We had the Army gave us two twin beaches. They'd been in the flood, and actually we got to fooling around and got one of them running. But boy, it was smoking, so got surplus. You could get a lot of cheap parts for the 985, so we sent out, got a top overhaul set up for it, and top overhauled it, and then run it again. And they had there was four or five engines that ran. We had this little test stand, it was on wheels, you mount the engine on it and get it squared away, take it outdoors and run it, and start it, do all this and that. And I looked around the corner one day and here's about four or five of them on this test stand on wheels with the engine running going down the runway. I had to try that. I enjoyed teaching school. It was interesting. And it kept you on your toes. If you want to learn your trade, teach it. Really get your attention and figure out how you've been screwing up for so many years. Oh, yeah, I'm reading off rules and regulations. I'd stop and say, boy, I've been goofing up here somewhere. I'd admit it. And I always told people, and they would ask, you ever make any mistakes or this? And I said, yes, I've made every mistake in the book, and I've invented a few of my own, and you might as well admit it. In 50 years, you're going to do this. Mm. If you don't, you haven't done anything. Oh, yeah. Ah, there was a beautiful airplane. That was a converted lodestar, referred to as the Lear Star, and that longer, sharper nose on it, and fared in a bit. Actually, it was a Lockheed L-18. We had that when they had the B-25s, and we had that, and we were using it for smoke jumpers. Mm. They loved it. They said it was just like stepping off the back stairs. Mm-hmm. It slowed down real nice. And yet it had a good turn of speed to it. Yeah, it was quite a machine.
Was this when you were in business with Dan Gilbertson?
With Don Gilbertson. Don Gilbertson. Yeah. Our aero retardant company. You know, there's a mall and a truck and a pickup and my boom truck. And, oh, there's all kinds of activity going on here.
Is that the van still?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was taken in a museum in Germany. That is a Messerschmitt ME-109, and it's not a very large airplane except for that engine. Mm. And you look at that landing gear, and you can figure out why they had a lot of accidents on landing. That was one of their big problems. Mm. But yeah, a massive engine, small cockpit, cramped.
When were you in Germany?
No, Barbara talked me into going over there once, twice, I guess. You know.
Did you visit lots of art museums?
Oh boy! Jeez, gotta, you know, if you've seen one old church, or one old castle, that's about enough. And I went through every church in England, I think, that you could get close to. And old rock piles that were at one time in convents, or what's the other one for men? Monasteries. Mm-hmm. And like I say, after you look one of them over, you got it pretty well figured out. I had to go to all of them. And then now and then we got to go to this museum. This was right on an old Luftwaffe field. It was a really nice place.
You know, I think that the Air Museum here in Fairbanks, I've never been in it.
It's interesting. It's good.
Not when I paid attention, but I think it opened last weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it should be now.
I think maybe I'll go down and check it out tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of photos. Now, this is the same runway in Germany, mm-hmm. the museum.
I guess in the Air Museum here, they have what's left of the Eielson wreck, parts of the Hamilton that he crashed in.
Oh, I think there were. There was some of it. And then there's part of an old Fokker of Wien's. They have a fuselage. Mm. I haven't been over there for a couple of years. It irritated me that we're in there looking around, and they have taken people who made home builds, and then they don't know what to do with them. You know, if they sell them, they're still liable because they built it if something goes wrong. So then get a little scared, so they donate it to the museum. Well, it has nothing to do with Alaska Aviation, but there's about a half a dozen of these things in there, and no reason for it. I didn't like that at all. But there are some interesting things.
Have you been to the Air Museum in Anchorage?
Oh, yeah. 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 Before and after.
Before and after.
Well, there was one guy that was running it, and he's kind of the one that got a spark plug and got it started. And then they ran him off. But they made a mistake. They'd had a Stinson trimotor low wing donated to him. And when this fellow left, it turned out it was in his name. So he actually took it with him. Mm-hmm. And the one they got going now, I don't know, they get quite a bit of stuff in there. It's like I told him I had a ski press if they wanted it. They called me, actually. I said, yeah, I still got it. I don't, it's sinking in the mud out back. Oh, they're going to come and get it. Well, that's 3-4 years ago.
I guess I don't know what a ski press is.
You build wooden skis on it. Mm-hmm. It's a big, massive screws and
to laminate them together this way, or
oh, you could go every which direction, yeah, mm. yeah. But all I ever used on it was plywood. I made some toboggans and stuff. Did make a couple of skis, come to think of it. Mm. It worked all right.
Was a ski press a common thing back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ween's had one. Alaska Airlines had one. Everybody had one. They're making their own. You figure out. Yeah, there's bigger, heavier airplanes, blankets and gull wings and stuff, and they took a big ski. Mm. I think the largest you get here was probably about 12 foot long, if you want to do. Mm. About, I think, 20 inches wide, something like that. Mm. Luftwaffe Museum, yes. They had a pretty good collection there. And inside they had some service rigs, and motorcycle, and sidecar, a bunch of other little odds and ends.
Have you been to the Air Museum in Seattle?
Yeah. They have one up, what do they call it? Something of flight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
Is there much in the Seattle Museum Alaska related?
Oh, shoot. The one Boeing Trimotor, that used to be Reeves' airplane. Mm-hmm. And it's been rebuilt. It looks beautiful. Yeah, there's a little bit. And there's part of the place where when airplane business got slow, they built furniture. Boeing did. Mm-hmm. The 172 unfloats.
Is this Chena Marina or
Iron No, Runner? No. That's over here on the Chena. This is Fouch's runway in the foreground, I think.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Maybe not. That could be Chena Marina at that. Yeah, probably is. Yeah, it probably is. That was the year of the deep snow.
Mm-hmm. Looks like someone's been wandering around out here.
Oh, yeah.
Little trails.
Got over to sweep the wings off.
Oh, yeah. When someone ties down a plane at your place, are you responsible for things like that?
No, I tell them, you got to take care of your own sweeping. Of course, a lot of them don't show up, and finally you get to feel sorry for the airplane. Mm-hmm. There's a couple that are out of town all winter, so you sweep theirs off. Mm-hmm. Sweep off Bucks is on his own property, but we take care of them. Mm-hmm. And a couple others. And basically, they're supposed to take care of themselves. And I'm getting long enough in the tooth, I'm going to let them. Now, man, you've got to take care of your own snow this year, buddy. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Cold day in the winter.
You look cold.
My mustache was iced up badly. But it wasn't white then. It was still a little reddish. Yeah, oh boy, there was a lot of snow there a couple of years.
I think we'll do about 10 more pictures, Jim. We can segment this out.
Okay. Oh, gosh, been at it for about an hour now, haven't we? Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a while to get through these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is over at Chena Marina. Mm-hmm.
That's looking back towards the hills, huh?
Yeah.
Was there no shop there yet?
Or is no.
Looking across the road?
No, there was nothing there.
Okay.
And then let's see. I think that's over here, the Fouts's. Mm. I remember by the time that winter quit, I was standing up in front of those wings. You couldn't see them. Mm. The only thing it was showing was the vertical fin and the prop. Mm. And then we had, 150 inches. And, of course, you're sweeping off, and it's piling up fore and aft. Mm-hmm. The tail, you swept it off for a while, then you pushed it underneath for a while, and then you... Yeah, it was a rough winter. It's getting higher. My first hangar. That was a Nenana. I was changing a cylinder on that thing. Made up some 2x2 framework, and took it down, assembled it, and put the tarp over it, and hooked up the heater, and I was in business.
Remember who that was for?
Yeah, it was for Ron Rosander. Still working on the same airplane. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Was it common for you to have trips to Nenana? I mean, you pretty much would take a job whenever it was.
Oh, yeah, something would show up. You'd go to Nenana if you tell guys, you know, they want you to come down and work in the airplane. Well, see if you got some of your friends who can take care of two or three at one time. Mm. Kind of cut down on the travel time that way. And I also went to Delta every now and then. And went to Tok a couple times. That was about it there. That was too far to go. And one guy wanted me to come down to Tok, and he said, what do you charge for traveling? I said, same as working. It's, you know, I could be making that much. Well, he didn't. He couldn't see that. Mm. That was one of the war blows, the tight one. There's one that spent money and one that didn't. I think Charlie was the one that spent the money. Anyhow, he got killed in a helicopter crash. Oh, yeah, Nenana, clear, Delta.
Would you take your van?
Yeah. Yeah, that, a bunch of parts and pieces, odds and ends, gaskets, things like that that, that you know you're going to need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that made a pretty good setup. Except the snow started melting and got pretty slippery inside.
Would you tow the Herman Nelsons or have them inside the van?
Oh, I had them inside the van.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm thinking of the big... The big Herman Nelsons that I saw in Prudhoe.
That was big monsters, yeah. No, these. I had a extended the front bumper out, mounted one right there. Mm-hmm. And that worked pretty good until I was going up to, where the hell was it? I had to go over Clary's summit, over Chattanooga. It was in the spring, and oof, started overheating. So I had to stop against a snowbank, unload the thing off the front, drive ahead, then put it back in the back. Mm-hmm. Kind of heavy when they're full of gas.
Yeah. Just blocking the radiator, huh?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. We had one of these little whirly winds come through and picked that plane right out of the water and dropped it there on its back. It's a real high, must have been a powerful one, because you looked at that airplane and then on a 45-degree angle across the parking at Interstate International, there were about four more airplanes that were damaged, and just in this one straight line, quartering across the taxiways.
Wow, you wouldn't...
I want to tell you, when you take floats off when the airplane's upside down, you have to stop and think now and then. Things are backwards. But I took my fine boom truck over and did the job.
How do you go about riding something like that? I mean, where do you begin to lift?
Well, first thing was to come in and rig up with some straps and stuff and disconnect the floats and get them down out of the way. And then, let's see, you get a big tire or you dig a hole or the other and work away at it for the spinner and all that, hub prop humming. Good too. Then you tie onto the tail and you commence to lift and you get her up vertical and then you screw around a bit more and you put the, by this time you've got the wheels in place and you bring it down. Now you'll be sitting on the nose and the main gear. And this point is where a lot of things went wrong. Because everybody says, oh, we got it made. And they pull down, and it comes down and breaks the tail in, or breaks the fuselage, or does anything. You have to let them down gently. Mm-hmm. You can, the last couple foot, you can let her go. But when it's way up there in the air and it comes down, it just does tear things up.
Did you figure that out the hard way, or did you just watching other people do it?
Oh, no, I didn't. I realized it right away. Uh-huh. This is going to hurt things if that comes out. It's up there 15, 20 feet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some more pictures. You had to crawl up and down the boom and re-rig a couple times. Yeah, I was a skinny fellow in those days, huh?
Is that you?
I think it's me.
No.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you?
That's me.
That looks like a short version of you.
Oh, just the way the picture was taken.
Yeah, that picture looks like someone about 5 foot tall. Well, this is a vintage picture that I don't think I have any others of. Maybe I just don't recognize it because you don't have your German boat captain's hat on.
Yeah, well.
So, in this picture, he looks like he's... Is it just a different angle? It looks like it's further up on the bank.
No, it's right in the same place. Okay. That picture. there, like I say, I come in and rigged up and figured out how to get the floats coming up.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of neat that that old boom truck was your dad's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, it set out. He used it for a bit, and then it set out and decided I'd put a boom on it. It was just a regular truck. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, man, I said, what do you think? Put a boom on that thing. We can use one around here, your stuff, too. I'll rig it up so it picks about 3,000. It'll be safe to up to about 3,000 pounds, which is the weight of a B-25 engine. Mm-hmm. And so the old man said, yeah, go ahead and try it. Well, we couldn't get it running. Turned over, but wouldn't fire. Rogers Auto took it, and they said they had to pry some of the valves out with a crowbar, put it together, and it hasn't been touched since, and it starts every year. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we'll stop at two more pictures, or maybe at the end of this series. There you got the floats off.
Got the floats off, yeah. And I've moved away from the airplane.
Was once again this the kind of job that you would tackle by yourself, or would you?
Oh yeah, sure? I was all alone. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just common everyday things that you do, but to me, it's for someone to take on flipping a plane up over. Right side up when it's upside down all by themselves.
Well, it's got a good point to it. You don't have anybody going to argue with you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to do it their way, and you're going to, I do it my way. Nobody's bothering me. Okay? That's it. Oh, yeah, I've got those deals where there's been three or four people involved, and it just gets to be a absolute screw up all the way around.
It's just saving that since I flipped it.
That's the proud owner, Howard Axtell. Pretty nice guy.
See, that needs to
go. Now I've got the gear on it, you see. Mm-hmm. And now comes the tricky part. As you can see, you pick it up, and then you have to ease things around a bit and get it back to where it's sitting on the nose and its wheels. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I see what you mean, because your boom's not taller than it. You can't just let it down. It's going to try to come quickly.
Yeah. You're going to have a place. You're going to have one spot in here where there's going to be a little free fall. Mm. So you got to watch that pretty close.
I was thinking that your boom was taller than the plane, and you could kind of just let it down.
Well, I had it pretty well up there, but still at the same time, no, you got to watch it. Cubs, I've lifted right up, and you're just hanging completely on it, and then you start letting down and backing up and carrying on. Yeah, now we're coming down a bit. No, that's about the same thing, just from a different angle. Mm. Now we got her. We're on the nose and the gear. And you see how high that tail is.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't hurt the engine pivoting on the nose like that?
No, it was a big rubber tire down there. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a couple guys that came over, and I was setting her down. You see, everything was fine. In fact, that fellow there, Gary Porter, his name is, he came over and he's laughing. And he says, well, you made me some money, Jimmy. I said, what are you talking about? Well, he says, you showed up and went to work, and the comments were made that, Christ, he can't do that by himself. Gary says, I'll betcha. And he won. He says, when I see you showed up alone, I realize you're just going to do this. Mm-hmm. And they'd see me doing other stuff the same way, putting floats on, doing everything. That's Hal Bogenreif, known as Bogey, one of the old Bush pilots, pretty much retired at this point. He was still giving flying lessons. Yeah, he was teaching people, students, a little bit.
I think this is a good place to stop for the day.
Okay. Sounds like I feel like it too. I'm ready for a nap.
We've been talking for an hour straight, or a little more.
You can do that easy when you're lubricating with beer, but I'm not even interested in beer anymore. Oh, yeah, that was one of my mistakes.
I can see that happening with a road washing out.
Well, I looked over to the side and I looked ahead, and there it was. Mm. I tried to get after the road commission. Christ, you didn't have any signs up. You have nothing. Christ almighty. Well, tough luck, kid. Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Ah, what a great machine that is.
Like I say, it'll be, I'll probably go ahead and work on the house next weekend and get a hold of you the following week.
Where's this house at?
It's up there on Chena Ridge, where we have a duplex up there, and I had a 1,500 square foot shop that I added on to. And then, so it's about 1,800 square foot now. And then two summers ago, when I had a broken neck, I built 36 foot wide, 18 foot tall barn roof trusses and put them up there and got the roof sheathed and just covered in tarps. And this summer we got the dormers in, finishing the end wall, trying to move forward on it. Out of pocket, so it's slow.
Oh, yeah, that's safe for a couple of years. That's the way the hanger did. I said, God, you got that right up. I said, yeah, it took me about 4 years or better. You know? What was the one thing that showed up? Oh, they had the building up. Nothing inside, no door, you know. It was just, that's as far as I can get. And I get my taxes notice, and they got this BFD, $5,000. I said, what the hell's a BFD? So I goes down to the bureau. I said, what's going on here? What's this BFD? Oh, it's your bifold door. Lady, there ain't a door on there. There's nothing in there. It's three walls and a roof is all it is. Well, they came over and looked, and sure enough, it was three walls and a roof, and that was all. But yeah, they decided there was a door there, so they were going to charge me for that, too. When he did finally get around the doors, I said, and he says, well, about these doors? I said, we just built them. They're worth about, I think I got about $500 or $600 in them or something like that. So you don't need that fancy bifold, son of a bitch.
They're just hoping that people don't look at their tax bill and they'll just pay it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you know the hangar burnt down in February? I still have to pay taxes on it. That's one of the rules. If they've sent out the notices and it burns afterwards, you got to pay the full tab. Mm-hmm. But then next year, of course, they ain't going to get anything.
Mm-hmm. Any more trips to Seattle coming up soon?
Yeah, yeah. I got probably in June sometime, I think. It's about 2 months. They want to check one more time.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy with Virginia Mason?
Yeah, yeah, but it's like every hospital you go to. You get this doctor who's supposed to be very good, and he's only got one day that he's at that hospital. He's at these other places, too. Mm-hmm. And I ran into that. And then there's the doctor that he does the job on you, and then you want to, hey, wait a minute, something's wrong here. Well, he's on vacation. Mm-hmm. And that happens. I know doctors have vacations too, so it irritates the hell out of you, especially after you fly down there and then find out, shit, you know, you get to talk to him for 10 minutes and he's gone. But this is a very good man. This guy here, this Huffer, said he kind of screwed me up because he did that TURP operation and he shouldn't have. It was right there. If you've had radiation, do not get in your car because you don't heal. Mm. And then I ran into Al, it's Bjork Hangar number one. In my old place at Sam's Club, we're talking away, and I said, how are you doing with this and that? And he said, oh, Jesus Christ. He says, when you go outside to Virginia Mason for your urology work? I said, yeah, this guy here fucked me all up. He got me, too, he says. He had the kidney stone starting to move. And he went, of course, you go to the urologist. He's the guy that's the pro at it. And he got in there with the tool, and he's trying to get it out, and he didn't give him any painkillers.
Oh, no.
Al says, Christ, he was hurting enough, and then that son of a bitch. And he said, after about 3 cries, he said, that's enough of that shit. So he went to the hospital, and they got it out okay, and then he talked to his regular doctor, and the doctor says, Jesus Christ, you've got to be kidding me. No anesthetic? Nope, not a bit. And then Huffer goes off on his usual dialogue about how you can cure yourself if you just have the right diet. Well, he's a vegetarian. He doesn't eat anything, fowl or eggs or cheese or nothing. And he's disgustingly healthy. But he's young. He'll fall apart, too. Mm. Oh, yeah. It's downright interesting. Anyhow, I found somebody to agree with me about that experience. No. Yes, all right.
Yeah, I kind of got a, I got on a high note and then a little deflated. But I'm actually chasing things down a little further now. They're now curing diabetes with a islet cell transfusion.
A what?
An islet cell. Your islet cells are what make the insulin in your pancreas.
Oh, okay.
And they can take one pancreas and get like 10 islet cell transfusions out of it, cure 10 diabetics.
Oh.
And I got referred to a study.